Hello and welcome to the J-Rod Sports Pod with me, James Robson.
And me, Ollie Dix.
It's actually the J-Rod F1 Pod, isn't it? Because we're sitting in beautiful sunny Oxfordshire in the back garden of one special guest host, Sam Courty. Hopefully Alfresco 2.0 is going to be saved on the laptop and be able to be uploaded onto the interweb. Because that was quite irritating last time, wasn't it, Sam?
It was, yeah. We put a lot of effort into our podcast.
We did. Not as much as this time, though, because Sam's housemates have provided lunch for Ollie, biscuits for the both of us, and Sam has provided us with some chairs and a table, which is very nice. So,
yeah. Socially distanced outside. Sun is shining.
Shout out to Xanthi for hooking the J-Rod F1 pull up with an enjoyable recording experience. So let's jump straight into the conversation that we are having about the Grand Prix at Imola this weekend. Right, and we are starting today's episode with a special announcement from one Mr. Ollie Dix. So I'm going to hand over to you, Ollie.
So today is the 4th. Tomorrow is the 5th. 2 days ago, on the 2nd of November, is Happy Is That Glock Day. So I would like to ask you both where you think you might have been on the 2nd of November, 2008.
I know where I was. I was at school. In the, we had a TV room in our boarding house, and I remember watching it there. Yeah, it was like the end of my, it was the start of my second year there, and it was pretty mental. We were all watching it and all shouting. Sam. Any ideas? 2008, so you must have been about, what, 22 then, 23?
I'm actually trying to work out how old I was.
That shouldn't be that hard.
So it's it's your current age, minus a couple of years.
Minus eight.
No.
Minus eight?
yes, the 2016 recording of the J-Rod F1 pod. Oh.
2020.
Minus 12.
And we were looking at 2008.
Sorry, I need to understand. Can we take this out of the podcast?
Absolutely not.
12. So that's 15. Is that right?
I don't know. Yes, that is correct.
Okay. I mean, I have absolutely no idea. I would have been in. Is it a weekend?
Yeah, races. Formula One races tend to happen on the weekends. Yeah, most of them happen on Sundays, for all I've heard. Yeah.
15.
Why have we got Sam here as our special guest host and Formula One expert?
It's more for our sanity.
It's just someone else to talk to, really, isn't it?
I don't know what I've been doing. I actually might have been out hunting. Oh, no, that's a Sunday. That's a Saturday. I don't know. Probably not doing anything.
Sam,
actually,
we
I
can't
might
check,
have been.
So just make it up. If you,
I might have been actually at my grandparents' house watching the F1, but I wouldn't have had a clue what I was watching.
Where were you?
If I'm being honest, I expected a bit more from that.
What, from me?
Answer. Yours was understandable, yeah. I believe I was playing a football game.
Did you win?
Well, I would have been 11. So probably, yeah. That was the high point in my footballing career.
Ollie's heyday.
When I was 6 foot and everyone else was five.
Everyone else was five? What are you doing playing them as an 11-year-old? You're 6 years older than them. Right, shall we turn our attention then from is that Timo Glock and Sam not knowing what Formula One is or how maths works to this week's Grand Prix at Imola. First thing we've got to say is that Mercedes have won the Constructors' World Championships again.
Woo yay, woo yay, woo yay, woo yay.
I'll just cut that bit. I'll cut that bit and play it just like on repeat. So it's their seventh Constructors' World Championships since essentially the team was founded in, was it 2010, 2011? Quite an impressive achievement, wouldn't we say? Do we think this has been the easiest one they've had?
Yes.
Yeah, quite easily. Like, the easiest one, I think, as well, by a country mile. yeah, just pure dominance, really. And I think as well, like, I think Verstappen's probably DNF'd more this year than he ever has. And they've just, yeah, they've had so many points that other teams have lost as well. And with a third team not really winning races, that just made it so much easier, didn't it, really?
Yeah, it's just like absolute consistency week in, week out with both drivers. And I think that's not only both drivers have been finishing well, but they've been on the podium most times. And yeah, I think they've just, no one's even come close.
I think it's interesting because, and we've spoken about it a bit before, but like Formula One is a sport where the team wants the team to win. And the driver wants the driver to win, and the two don't often mesh. But Mercedes have figured out a sort of formula that, you know, they not only win the drivers' world championships or drivers' points, but they also win the constructors' world championships, and they've managed to make it work so that they kind of get both. It's, you know, if you look at someone like Red Bull, they're very clearly in it for one driver. And, I mean, arguably Ferrari are doing the same this year. But Mercedes had this, like, team attitude that is kind of different to a lot of the other teams in Formula 1. So I think the dominance is, in fact, more impressive this time. That's why I'm saying, I don't know, it's probably the easiest numerically, but the most impressive, because they were just so dominant the whole way through.
I think these things are made easier, though, when you're winning. I don't think Red Bull had these problems when it was Vettel and Webber, and Vettel won four straight. Don't think Ferrari had these issues when they won, was it 98 to 2004, when they won six straight. I think, you know, these problems only arise when you're, like, not winning. And I think it's so easy, so much easier for Mercedes to gloss over Bottas's potential, you know, concern with not being the main driver and everything, because they are winning so much. If they started to not win, I think it would become a lot more of a relevant and important issue.
Yeah, I think they've done very well as a team to stay consistently as good, because not only do Mercedes and now have the dominance where they can have the best drivers, but they've also managed to retain the best drivers. Like, they haven't seen a drop in performance. They've constantly been able to step on each year, which has meant that they can keep Hamilton and the next best, the best second driver. They've been able to do that.
I think they've also, yeah, I think they found someone who's incredibly compliant in Valtteri Bottas. And I don't know how much longer his patience is going to last, but I think, you know, he's almost, I would say, an unsung hero, but, you know, he's one of the guys that outwardly doesn't seem like he minds coming second, even though I think it does irk him. And in his interviews, yeah, you're starting to see a bit more of the fact that it grates him. And I was watching The Drive to Survive the other day, and it's like, oh, every time Lewis beats me, it's like a knife in the back. And I'm like, yeah, but
he's got quite a few holes in his back.
Yeah, but you're coming, like second every race. And everyone else is coming third. Yeah,
I see it as one of those, like, plastic knives that you get that, like, splinters before it gets into your back, snaps.
Yeah, it's a bit of a strange analogy, but yeah.
So who's his? How is being stabbed in the back every time Lewis wins and a good analogy?
Yeah, I don't know. I think there are very few drivers that would do what he's done for as long as he's done it. And there are very few drivers in the paddock who would accept second fiddle as long as he has. And I think that's quite impressive, because he's made a career for himself out of being the second best driver in the team. And that's a level of self-awareness that a lot of drivers don't have. Speaking of one of them, do we think Alex Albon's time's up?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell us how you really feel, Sam.
I thought this weekend he had there was a part in the race, sorry, when he, it was like, this is it now. Like, it's time. He can either go on and do something, or this is his time at Red Bull over. And he didn't capitalise on it. And he, yeah, Max retired, and so he finished as the top driver. But he's just like, there just doesn't seem to be any personality or drive or frustration or anything, like emotion, that you want to see. Like, I don't know whether that's me trying to predict what good drivers should be like, but at some point you just think you can see like something from him. Like, Leclerc's season at the start wasn't going well, but his interviews, he was annoyed, he was frustrated, and it's improved, and now you can start to hear a bit more positive things from him. Whereas Albon just seems to have been on this same level playing field, like this same level of not showing much, and that's exactly how his season has gone. And like, if I was at Red Bull, I think I'd want to be seeing a bit more from him.
Very rarely do you see someone with their back against the wall in Formula One for so long and not see some form of like aggression, frustration, purely from the way like they drive. Even if, like Sam said, okay, we saw that from Leclerc with his interviews, we've seen it when other drivers have gotten annoyed with, like, you know, you see, I always equate it to Grosjean. Grosjean is probably a very competent driver, but when he gets frustrated, he pushes the car too much, makes mistakes, but it's because he's almost trying too hard. Like, he's trying to do the things that actually the car isn't capable of doing. Whereas with Albon, it just seems like he's just driving the car well within its limits, because there's almost a fear of making a mistake. I think if any of us could drive a Formula One car, you would probably drive it to a similar, basically, like personal intensity of Albon, in that you want to get it round in one piece, you don't want to go into a corner too fast, you don't want to brake like too late, and that kind of that seems to be like the trend of his driving at the moment and the trend of his interviews. And to make matters worse, is in my head, a Toro Rosso car should never be going past the Red Bull one. And the Danny Kvyat's last, that, I mean, that lap after the safety car went in was incredible. Like, to watch it, how he just, the car was doing everything that it wanted, like he wanted it to do. And it seemed like he was really ready and really gunning for it. He was like, we've got an amazing opportunity here. And whereas Albon just, yeah, it's, I think it is over for him, but I'm intrigued as to whether Red Bull, what they do still.
I think, for me, what's so sad about the Alex Albon situation is I can see the moment it changed. And those, well, the two moments were those two times he was shunted off by Lewis. Like, actually, if you think about it, until that, especially that race, was it in Brazil the first time? The end of last season? He was like, he came into that car when Gasly got dropped. He was that dynamic, aggressive, just making moves, pulling moves out of nowhere driver. And he got himself up into a really good position at one point. Went round the outside of Lewis, got shunted off the track. Then at the start of this season, it was kind of okay first race. I think it was the second race. I think it was Malaysia or something. Like, he did the same thing. Or maybe it was, I can't remember where it was, but he did the same thing essentially. Like, he tried to go around the outside of Lewis, had got past Lewis, shunted him off. And I think, like, if you take those two away and put him two podiums, suddenly he's building in confidence, and is a good driver for Red Bull. And I think, like, what's so sad about the situation is I can say, like, right, if you take those two moments out, which arguably weren't him, like, I think the Brazil one, definitely, it wasn't him. You know, he was past Lewis. It was Lewis's front wing or front tyre hitting Albon's rear tyres. Like, he was well past him, and Lewis just either understeered out or, you know, clipped him and shunted him off and spun him out. But he was a dynamic and aggressive driver, and it's kind of sad to see him go back into his shell and struggle. Do I think it's over for him? Not in Formula One, because I think there'll be people who take that risk on him.
Take the risk on him rather than Perez.
Yeah, because I think for a team looking to build to the future, like if you think about this from, you know, maybe he will mature and get to a point where he's comfortable driving, you know, a fast car in a way that's sort of almost at the limit but not going over the limit, as opposed to driving it well within itself. Whereas I think Perez is very, very good, but he's only going to be around for another 3 or 4 years. Whereas you could get Albon being around for another 10 or 15 if he turns into, I think, the driver that he's talented enough to become. I'm just not sure whether he'll get there. And it's strange because he has been given a lot of patience. But I don't know. It's just sad to see the moment that it all went wrong for him. And I actually think it probably wasn't his fault there.
I think the hard thing for him as well is that, okay, Kvyat did himself a massive favour this weekend. And Toro Rosso and Gasly are really in love right now and having a great time. And there doesn't seem to be that... No one at Toro Rosso... I don't think Kvyat necessarily would want to go to that Red Bull situation. I think that's quite a toxic seat now in Formula One that not a lot of people necessarily want to get involved in. I think only if you're an established driver and like someone like Ricciardo, who was there, like Perez, I think Hulkenberg would enjoy it. But a Toro Rosso guy is almost, I don't think I would want to go into that seat. A part of me wouldn't want to anyway, because of how toxic it is, and like, you know, you're going to be under pressure from the get-go. So there's no guys from Toro Rosso that are necessarily moving up to have that swap again.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think like Red Bull have shot themselves in the foot by not displaying any confidence in the drivers that they picked.
It's like a merry-go-round.
Yeah. And it's like, why would anyone want that job? Like, it's a great, you get to drive a Red Bull. But I think I asked this question to you guys before the season started. Or maybe just after the season started and Albon was doing badly. It's like, would you rather be the number one driver at McLaren or the number two driver at Red Bull? Would you rather be the number one driver at, you know, Alfa Romeo, say at the moment? Or would you rather be the number two driver at Red Bull? I would say that you'd rather be a number one driver somewhere else, because the number two driver at Red Bull is a no-win situation. You will be constantly under pressure, and unless you're beating your teammate, then you're going to be deemed a failure.
But they almost don't want that either.
Yeah.
They basically want someone who can finish third or fourth every race.
Yeah.
And okay, if you know, some cars clash, then you might, or it happens that you win the odd race, then great, they'll allow that. But I think they basically want someone who can finish somewhere between third and fifth every single race, consistently get points, and consistently be at the top, like get on that second row every race, so that strategically, you know, we can go into lap somewhere between lap 15 and, well, I can, they seem to be going even longer on these mediums now, somewhere between lap 15 and lap 25, where we're pitting, where we can put some people under pressure and, you know, make some changes and make a difference in the race, instead of just accepting that we can only beat Mercedes if Mercedes are having a bad day, not we can't beat them strategically, we can't have fun in that sense.
They almost need to clone Bottas, don't they?
Yeah, I think he's the
they
only...
They need a clone of Bottas to sit in that.
He's the only driver, that's what I mean, like he's kind of carved out this career for himself, because he's the only driver that looks like he can do that. He's like talented enough to be a number one driver, but humble enough to be a number two. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's very rare that you get someone who gets to that level of sport, who is so
like
talented.
Domestiques, isn't it?
Yeah.
Cycling.
That's exactly what it is. You know, especially with qualifying, you know, where at Monza, you're literally leading someone out for a qualifying lap. You're literally being their slipstream.
Yeah.
But, that Red Bull seat is a poison chalice, that's for sure. All right, let's have a look then at third place on the podium, Danny Ricciardo. It's great for him to get a second podium for the Renault team, and that he seems to be getting more and more and more comfortable. But moving to McLaren next year, is he in a situation like Carlos Sainz is, where he's like, oh God, what have I done?
Probably not as strongly feelings as Carlos Sainz probably has, but he just looks like he's having a good time. Like, he looks like he's enjoying his racing, and he seems to be getting on really well with the team despite him not being there next year. And like, they're still setting the car up for him. Like, it seems to be working really well. I'm almost just disappointed for him that he's having to leave.
I think this is almost they're both going to benefit from this. He's like, there's no pressure on him now to get results for the team. He can just go out there and race and have fun, and they're like, oh great, like, we can basically use him to get what gets the most out of this car. How can we set it up the best? How can, you know, we put ourselves in the best position to maintain the work that they're doing now? Because at the moment, what's annoying is you couldn't have Ricciardo and Alonso. Because I think if you had those, you could probably put yourself in a position where you are the third best team on the grid.
Yeah.
The way he's driving at the moment. But it seems to be like, when he gets an opportunity, I would say this is some of his best driving that we've seen in a long time. Yeah. You know, like, he gets himself into an opportunity and he's just having so much fun, that he's racing with so much confidence. And like, you saw him and Lewis, like, Lewis was so happy for him to be on the podium. And I think because he's such a fun guy to be around, but also works so hard, like, they're the guys that you want to be around and you want to have in your team. And I think you'll almost get, that will then start to almost infect at McLaren. And I can see that being the case at McLaren. Like, McLaren's car is not a bad car.
Yeah.
And I think actually it probably takes, Lando's probably lacking in a bit of confidence at the moment. Sainz must be distraught. You know, about what his future looks like a little bit. And I think they've been, I've kind of accepted that things haven't really gone their way. Whereas Ricciardo is just like, just living his best life almost.
Renault are in such a strong position at the moment. So they've got Ricciardo, who's driving the best we've seen him drive for a long time. So they're getting a lot of good data from him. But you also have Alonso in a car at the moment doing laps and driving. Like, it's not like another team where driver's seats are still undecided, and there's going to be like Ricciardo out and they've got a driver who's been in a Renault ready to go in. Like, in theory, they should hit the start of next season running. And I think that'll be quite interesting to watch.
Are they as good? Is Alonso still good enough? Is Alonso going to be good enough to reproduce, if not improve on the results that Ricciardo's been producing?
I mean, I have
gut feeling.
I'm not a fan, so I'm going to say no.
My gut feeling is that he'll be somewhere in between where Ricciardo is and where Ocon is. I think like fifth and sixth will be a good result for Alonso, whereas like your podium is your good result for Ricciardo.
Yeah, I'd probably agree. I don't think it's going to be as good with Ricciardo with Alonso.
But I do think he's an incredible driver.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll give you that. I'm kind of on Sam's thing. I'm not a fan.
Not a fan of the man.
Well, yeah, I don't know why I'm not a fan.
But of the driver, I think you kind of have to respect what he's done.
I lost a lot of respect for him when he was at McLaren. Because I was like,
you wish he'd done what Vettel is doing now.
Yeah.
Go about your business quietly. Like, we accept it's not a great car, but just race for us. Don't throw a paddy every time you don't finish well.
Yeah. All right, and speaking of Vettel, Ferrari are doing better with Charles Leclerc. I mean, Charles Leclerc is seeming to get that car to overperform.
Yeah.
But Vettel just seems to be languishing. That pit stop today, that pit stop this weekend was, I mean, I might as well have got out a grandfather clock to time it. It was just like, oh my goodness, what's going on?
It could have been big as well, though, for Vettel, because
he was running reasonably well.
Yeah, and they had to time that pit stop pretty well, and they seemed to get it right. And then 13 seconds later, it was like two tyres they couldn't put on. It was...
I think it perfectly summed up his season.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not even his fault.
Like, nothing to do with him at all.
Yeah. Which can't be said for Lance Stroll, who decided to drive full pelt into his front jack man.
Yeah. And then what did he say? His brakes were
cold brakes.
Yeah.
Dad didn't fix them.
Dad didn't warm them up.
Yeah. I think what's quite interesting with him, I didn't quite understand how that racing... Perez managed to get so much out of that racing point, given how he started in not a great position. Stroll was pretty much at the back of the field the entire time, but also that they haven't confirmed that he's going to be back there.
Well, yeah, I think it's difficult when you're trying to get sponsors on board to be like, yeah, but my son's driving.
No, I know. I just find that quite interesting. Like, we get the, you know, dad owns a team and everything, so there's no rush, but I almost expected, once they did Vettel, I was like, oh, it's obvious that Perez is moving on. But why would you not sign him straight away as well? And I think there's a few results here and there now that are starting to be a bit like, do we really want to keep him around for like 2 or 3 years?
I'm not a fan, so yeah. I'm not going to try and come up with an argument as to why Lance Stroll should be in Formula 1. But it's a great thing Lawrence Stroll is, so makes an interesting team. Okay, I think the last thing we've got to talk about before we sort of give our team of the weekend and driver of the weekend. My boy. Best driver in the field.
Oh.
I actually sent a message to our WhatsApp group, didn't I, when George Russell, I was like, yeah. George Russell was in 13th, and he was like, he'd just pitted for hards, he'd come out, and I was like, everyone else in front of him is on mediums. George Russell is in the money here. I was like, he's in the points. And then did you see Kimi Raikkonen's team radio when they were like, you're P11, P11, P11? And then Kimi's like, oh no, the Williams is just driving off the road.
P10, that was an easy
P10,
pass.
That was an easy pass, good, next one. Yeah, it was very... Look, I think it was...
You were also convinced he got hit.
No, I was convinced Albon got hit. Because they said that Albon got hit on the restart.
Okay.
That was an unbelievable bit of driving from Carlos Sainz to not crash into a sideways Red Bull.
That's like one of those classic things. I don't know where I picked this up from, but I remember them saying, this must have been when I was younger, that when you're driving an F1 car, to like aim for the car, because by the time you get there, the crash will have moved. And he had serious balls to keep that car going the way it was, because he was driving straight for Albon, but like they said, the car wasn't there by the time we got to it, but that was tight.
Yeah.
But Russell, yeah, absolutely had a shocker.
Yeah. What did I say? George is getting points. Vettel, Raikkonen, and Latifi haven't stopped, and the McLarens are on mediums and will stop again. And then straight afterwards, he biffed it into the wall. So George, on behalf of the general F1 pilot, I'd like to apologise for jinxing you, getting your first points. But like until that point, he had driven well. He hadn't driven like we'd come to expect George Russell to drive on a Sunday. He'd held positions. He'd made good. Like he was. And I know it's hard. I was interested. I think I was listening to David Coulthard talk about it, and he was like, he's never come across that bit of the track. George Russell will never have come across that bit of the track at that speed, because there's like a bump that goes down, and he was just trying to light it up to keep the tyres warm. And literally, as the car goes light, he hits the throttle and like spins. And he's like, he's never experienced that. That's just inexperience. That's not like a lack of skill necessarily. That's just like a tough deal.
Sounds like an excuse to me.
Yeah, well, George Russell didn't make it. So I guess it's a kind of. I thought. Did you see Lewis's Lewis's comments on his post, and everyone was commenting on his post. Grosjean commented, being like, "Been there, buddy." I was like, "Yeah, you have crashing under the safety car."
I think Toto always also said that, you know, it's sometimes it's good for drivers to do that, you know. And Grosjean replied to him on Twitter like, "Ah, yes, well, I hear you've not signed both drivers for next year." So Grosjean for Mercedes 2021. You heard it here first.
Yeah, the Grosjean Russell pairing.
I mean, God. Bottas is signed, so that is impossible.
Reserve driver.
Yeah.
I mean, he's devastated about it, and he did hold his hands up and say it was his fault. But it did, from the outside, just look like he just got a bit excited and then just drove into a wall. But you never know. He might get a point this season.
I thought, I'm genuinely serious. Like, I thought he was in a good position and driving well. And I think, like, if you're Williams and stuff, you go like, well, he's never going to do that again. So
you
that's
hope not
really an issue. But yes, Ollie, as you said very eloquently in our notes, Russell was in the points and biffed it into the wall, and Sam helpfully added unforced error. That tennis stats.
Yeah, that is a new stat that we should get in Formula One.
The unforced error.
I think it's a thing. There is absolutely no one to blame but himself.
No. Okay, and one quick thing to note, and we have reached out to our contact within the Formula One world, who we know quite well, to ask what part of their team's car was doing inside Valtteri Bottas's, because Bottas finished the race, drove the car back to the garage, and the Mercedes pit crew managed to pull pretty sure like half a Ferrari out of the floor. And what it turns out is the aero damage had been there since lap two, and it had been because of a first lap collision with someone else, and Bottas has just driven over a bit of debris, and it just been like, yeah, well, I fancy being part of your car now. Well, it's the highest that Ferrari will finish this year, so that's good.
It's the fastest they've ever gone.
Well, that's good, that is. I enjoyed that.
I asked Tom, how did you miss? A huge piece of your car was missing, and he just pretty big chunk. But that, fair play to Bottas though, because to finish second with what can only
half
be
of another person's car on board
underneath, like the downforce and like the aerodynamics around his floor must have been compensated, but he did all right. I mean, I think it shows he must be a pretty good driver, but I just don't know how Ferrari just were convinced that it wasn't them.
I mean, and I feel sorry for Vettel as well, because it was off Vettel's car. And he said on the radio, I'm pretty sure there's something wrong with the front wing. And they go, we've checked the cameras and the television, we've had a look, you're okay. And he must be there going, I don't know how to say this nicely, but please look again, because I know part of my front wing is missing. Like, these guys can feel like when a nut is loose, and you're there telling him, oh no, your front wing is fine, when it was missing, this is going to be a technical term, one of the wavy things.
It's the kind of in-depth analysis that they've brought here. But one also, of the wavy bits.
But also, I don't know, like, surely they could have picked that up off some, like, Bottas's team radio. Like, Bottas knew that he'd driven over some debris, and surely you drive over the debris and then the debris is no longer there. Like, you have an idea, and he would have been able to say something, because Mercedes knew before they'd even taken it out that it was either Ferrari or Racing Point. So, like, it just baffles me that they missed it, and it's not even a small bit of car.
No, it is literally a massive bit of the car that is just stuck in someone else's.
In the 13 seconds that they did the pit stop, I reckon they could have changed that front wing.
Or noticed it.
The whole nose.
I reckon Vettel could have got out, run over to the Mercedes garage and picked out the bit of car that he wanted back and put it back on. Probably could have stuck it back on with a bit of glue. Had enough time to set. I think you summed it up perfectly there, Ollie. I feel sorry for Vettel. Not just about today, just in general.
His season.
A revenge tour next year.
Oh yeah, that Aston Martin better be quick.
It's going to be so good in green.
Okay, team of the weekend.
Yeah, so I've gone for a rogue one here. I know we've spoken about Mercedes, constructors, etc. My team of the weekend are Alfa Romeo. I think Kimi was voted driver of the day, which he probably didn't care about. Okay, thanks. he probably, and you know, I thought he did a good job. I think there has been times on this podcast where I have slated the fact that Giovinazzi should not be in Formula One, and I have changed my tune. Every race I watch now, I don't care about what happens at the front. I want to just watch him on that first lap. I think on average he makes up like four places, and I just think like that's real racing. That's like really impressive. And yeah, and to start 20th, not great. After Saturday, he must be like the complete opposite of Russell. But to then make up the 10 places, drive well, he seems to be really coming into his groove. And I think, yeah, like really quite impressive. And to get some points is really good.
Yeah, I think that Alpha, I think he's... Giovinazzi is probably driving like this because he's getting more and more comfortable, and he's, you know, the team showed him a bit of confidence by signing him again. I think that's a massive thing, and like it, that these last couple of performances show what can happen when a team does that. You know, show a driver a bit of faith and they'll probably repay you. Right, Sam, any other closing thoughts and feelings or emotions from the weekend before we send the lovely listeners off into another week without your sweet dulcet tones? Good.
Vintage Sam, that is.
I was trying to think of something interesting to say. Well, Lewis Hamilton, after refusing that he would ever do, is it a shoey? They were being called, yeah, on the podium, actually asked Ricciardo to take his other shoe off so he could join him.
And then confirmed the next time that he would do one, he would use his own shoe.
Yeah, that is a bold strategy, especially with COVID.
Yeah.
That's maybe not particularly COVID secure.
That's not particularly COVID secure, is it?
I think that's a bit of science there. We've had a full primary school curriculum today from Sam. You can't spread COVID through feet sweat. And
20 minus 8. 12 is science.
It's 16.
Anything else, Sam?
I'm good. I'm out.
You're out. Okay.
I'm out. I would drop the mic, but you'd shout at me.
Yes. All right. Thank you very much for listening to that episode of the J-Rod F1 Pod. Looking back at the Grand Prix we just had in Imola. Sam, where are we next time?
So we have one on the 13th of November in Turkey, in Istanbul. And then, this says the 27th in Bahrain.
Hamilton can win the championship in Turkey. That's unbelievable.
Right, so there we go. A comprehensive review without us Googling anything about exactly what's happening in the Formula One world. So make sure that you be a friend and tell a friend about the J-Rod F1 Pod.